We've also been approached by private equity, you know, many groups. We feel that that's not the right move for us. We feel like private equity will change the lives of our franchisees in a very dramatic way. We've more than doubled the size of the company in, you know, 2.5 years, and we really just don't even feel like we've gotten started yet.
All right, welcome back to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. Families are always looking for a place to laugh, connect, and have fun together. And that's fueling explosive growth in the family entertainment industry. It's projected to skyrocket from $30 billion to over $108 billion by 2033. And one brand is turning that growth into glow-in-the-dark gold. Monster Mini Golf, an indoor black light mini golf and arcade experience built on affordable fun, family connection, and a monster-themed atmosphere that's really unforgettable. My guest today is Chris King, the CEO of Monster Mini Golf. When the founders retired, Chris, along with three top performing franchisees, bought the brand and transformed it from a regional concept into a national force. Under his leadership, Monster Mini Golf has grown from 29 locations to over 60. So it's pretty significant growth, generating average unit revenue north of $1.1 million with nearly 30% EBITDA margins, all in a 9,000 to 15,000 square foot model that's family friendly and a ton of fun. Today, we're talking about what it takes to scale joy, how this franchise keeps its monster personality, its operator-first culture, and its edge in one of the fastest-growing industries in America. All right, let's get into it. Welcome. I appreciate you taking the time out to be here. You've been around a long time. You've been in the franchise industry for decades. So I wanted you, if you could, at the beginning, just share your journey, especially in franchising, but obviously your background. And I want to understand how you and your partners arrived at Monster Mini Golf. Like, what's your journey? How did you get here?
Yeah, of course. First, thanks for having me. Yeah, pleasure to be on. Yeah, when I say, and I look back and I say I've been in franchising 26, 27 years, you know, it all goes by so fast, but you know, it's funny. The journey did start for me with my gym, Children's Fitness Center. And I was out of college living down in the Clearwater area. My parents said, you really got to get a job now. And I found it through, you know, an ad in the newspaper. No one finds a job in a newspaper. I don't know if newspapers even exist anymore, but it was a director of a franchise that was a franchisee that was opening my gym. And what I did is I got the job to be their director. I helped that couple open two stores in the Tampa area over, you know, let's say 3 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. And then someone I met at a MyGym conference that worked at an Orlando store, we got together and we moved two kids at, you know, 20, 30, 26, 30 years old. We moved from South Florida to Charlotte, North Carolina. And we brought the MyGym brand to the Charlotte area as franchisees. So we were very successful here. We opened three stores in about 4 years. And then the franchise company started, you know, kind of knocked on my door and said, hey, would you like to work for us? And I said, sure, that sounds awesome. And I've been doing remote since before remote was a thing, because one of my prerequisites was I'll take the job, but I want to move back to Florida. I'm going to sell my shares of the MyGyms here. I want to move back to Florida. MyGym is located in California. I want to live back in the Tampa area. And they let me do that. So okay. I took the job as their regional director over the Southeast. At that point, MyGym had about 45 stores only in the U.S. And over the next 13 or 14 years, I went from regional director, and then I occupied two regions. And eventually, I worked my way up to VP of operations on a global level. And we got MyGym, by the time I left, we probably had 320 locations in about 32 wow. countries.
Good for you.
You know, so I had a cool ride with them. I was involved in a lot. I got to do a lot of the international expansions. But what I really did was just cut my teeth in franchising. You know, I call that road with MyGym, you know, your boots on the ground experience. Plus it was like grad school. I learned everything I could. So MyGym yeah. wasn't as much about the MyGym itself as I just really learned everything about franchising. And then what was cool about it is the only reason I left MyGym, I was 40 years old. My wife and I had our first child. And I said, you know, I feel unfulfilled. I really want to lead something deeper than I'm leading right now. And mm-hmm. that's just something I needed personally and professionally. So I found Monster in an Indeed ad. So fast forward, that was just that version of the newspaper. And when I read the ad, it was titled Brand Manager, but it really spoke to operations and training. And that's really where I always lived. Okay. That's where I was always comfortable. That's where I really cut my teeth in franchising. in 2015, I accepted the job. I was hired as their COO. And I really worked with them, you know, just, you know, in the trenches, wrapping systems around it, you know, improving the brand, really getting it ready for scale. When I joined the company, we only had about 17 locations, you know, but it was a really cool concept and had a lot of legs. 7 years into it, and I was out in Las Vegas, where Pat and Christina live, for a franchise advisory council meeting. It was myself and Pat and Chris, and then our franchise advisory council. And we had this really great day of meeting, you know, super productive, you know, talking about what we're doing as a brand. At the end of the meeting, Christina said, you know, I think I'm going to retire. I think we're ready to retire. We don't have the energy to do this anymore. You know, my gym, I mean, Monster has been around for 21 years. It's not like we're a new brand. There's a real legacy behind it. And Pat and Christina, you know, ultimate entrepreneurs, very creative, really, you know, with their blood, sweat, and tears, built this thing from nothing. And they said, look, you know, we don't have the energy to do it anymore. We understand that if the company doesn't grow, it becomes stagnant. We're not the ones that want to grow it. We've also been approached by private equity, you know, many groups. We feel from where our brand is, we feel that that's not the right move for us. We feel like private equity will, at this point, change the lives of our franchisees in a very dramatic way. They said, now we're going to sell it either way, but would you four like to buy it? So they actually, at that meeting, we had no idea it was coming. They said, if you guys would like to buy it. And, you know, my partners and I, we're all multi-unit operators. You know, so I had signed my second lease. After we purchased the company, I opened up a third store. My wife runs our store. I concentrate on the brand. My partner, Nick Mastrangia in New York, he owns three in New Jersey. He owns one in New York. He's been a franchisee for 18 years. My partner, Alex, owns four in four different states, been a franchisee for, you know, 13 years. My partner, Holly, owns two now. Her second, she opened after we bought the brand. So she's been a franchisee for about 10 years. So it just made sense to us. We said, hey, can we maybe break for lunch and think about this? And then we came back to the table and we just said, you know what? We're honored that you would want to pass this brand along to us. And they wanted to do it for the right reasons. You know, they wanted to keep the foundation intact, you know, and really, you know, make sure their people that, you know, they, you know, built over the years were really taken care of. So we made the decision to do it. We actually signed in January of 2023. And for the first 2 years, we did nothing but infrastructure. And when I say infrastructure, we have kind of a unique thing about us is we own the construction company, the theming integration construction company that builds and does all the unique hand-painted art in our golf course. So we like to say we're the biggest vendor in our own project. You know, so when we bought the brand, we bought that construction company too. So for 2 years before we said, hey, can we sell 25 licenses a year? Can we open 12 to 15? We had to make sure that we could do it. We had to make sure that we could build that many because it's a huge responsibility to have that crew on the road. And there's a lot of legwork. You know, when I go into our brand, we hand paint artwork that takes 5 weeks to get a store ready just by the art alone. So we just had to know that we could scale and build. And I'm proud of myself and my partners. For 2 years, we didn't sell a thing. Now we had some franchisees that were reinvesting because the confidence was rebuilt. You know, we really are truly franchisees. Every decision we make in this brand is what's best for the franchisees. We're franchisees. We share the same laughter, the same tears. We walk on the same path every day with them. You know, so we had some people just double down with renewed confidence, but we really didn't try to sell. And then last October, about a year from now, we said, hey, the infrastructure is tight. Our support systems are tight. We're ready. We're ready now to kind of show the world who Monster Mini Golf is, because we've always thought that we're the coolest thing in entertainment that nobody knew about, because Pat and Christina, their choice, they always grew organically. So we aligned with the Repham Group, and the reason we aligned with an FSO for the sales portion is we didn't want to take our focus away from what we do really well. We support and we train very, very well. So we wanted to keep our focus on that. So, you know, we outsourced and partnered with the Repham Group. You know, they also have a build component, which helps us, you know, with project management. You know, so that's kind of where we are today. And, you know, to give you a snapshot of system growth, when we bought the brand in January of 2023, we had 26 operational stores and we had three pre-openings. So we were a total unit of 29. We'll have 39 at the end of this year open. We've opened 8 so far. We have one more that'll open in December. And we're a total license of about 63. So even taking that little infrastructure build and not selling for a little while, we've more than doubled the size of the company in, you know, 2.5 years, and we really just don't even feel like we've gotten started yet.
That's great. What a story. Most people don't get the full story when they start exploring franchising, so they make mistakes that cost them big. That's why my business partner, Justin Guevara, and I wrote Beyond the Brand, the Entrepreneur's Guide to Fearless Franchising. It is our proven six-step process at Phrenosity to help you find the right franchise, avoid costly pitfalls, and build a business that truly fits your goals. Grab your copy of Beyond the Brand on Amazon or any major book retailer and start building your future fearlessly. So Holly, Alex, and Nick, it's not like you guys work in a building. They're all scattered across the country.
And we all stay in our lanes very well. We're not suit and tie executives that are passing down the work. We're actually involved in the day to day. So I'm a acting CEO, but I'm in our world, titles don't mean that much because we all do a little bit of everything. But I still oversee the training division, the support division, a little bit of marketing. Holly has a background. She was an attorney, IP attorney for 30 years. So she's our chief legal officer. And then Nick really, you know, bit off a huge chunk of our business, and he is our chief development officer that really runs that Twisted Toy Box design and implementation. So he's the one that once we sign a lease, he works with the architects and the GCs and our internal crew to design and then travel and do the install of those golf courses and all of our, you know, all of our proprietary art and kind of
turn
our black box into a monster.
It was one of my questions. It's like, how are you replicating that look and feel, that amount of artwork and customization just across the country? And you've answered it. You're controlling it internally by owning the construction company. That was very smart, because it's hard to scale without it.
It's hard to scale without it. And you know, I think one of the fears when they decided to sell it to us and not private equity, one of the fears of going the other direction, it would become very cookie cutter. It would be screen printed on the walls and glow in the dark vinyl. And that's not who we are. That's not where the magic lives. You know, we do a storyboard on every area we go to, and it's not generic. You could put a football helmet on any wall in any city. That's not what we do. We go for obscure laws. We go for famous people, places, things that really connect with the fiber of that community. And we hand paint all of that on the walls. And, you know, you can't get away from what's made you successful, what sets you apart, you know, what's made you different than everybody else. Because a lot of people in the industry will say, no one's ever done Blacklight mini golf like you guys. Nobody can really get it, you know, but what you guys do, it can't be replicated. And you guys just have locked the market down on that, the way that you deliver it and with your elements of design. And also by owning that, it lets us be more nimble and more efficient. You know, we know when we can go and when we can't. And when we bought the company, this is pretty brilliant. Before we bought the company, it took the install team probably about 10 days on site to us get the black box and then us add all the color and build the golf course and do all that. We're down to about 4 days now. Wow. We're in and out doing all of that in 4 days. But we had to create those efficiencies so now we can fulfill. You know, we're going to open 9 this year. We were on track to open 12. 3 projects got pushed through the financing or construction or permits to the first quarter of next year. But, you know, we were ready to, okay, we can do it. We can open 12 to 15. We can build those now. So, you know, let's go. Let's go get to work.
I love it. So you take a vanilla shell, make it a black box, and then you monster mini golf arise it, right?
That's it. Yeah, we monsterize it, you know.
It's just black. It's great. So in my head, I hear these businesses. I see the trampoline parks. I go immediately to birthday parties. Is that true? Is that the lion's share of revenue would be birthday parties?
Not with us. Birthday parties in general. Now, some stores could do more than others. You know, it is what it is. But right now, system-wide, that birthday party revenue is about 11 to 13%.
Really?
But here's what's cool about us, what we're able to pull off through the way we design our stores. Our foot traffic across all stores is 65% adult. You wouldn't think that. You would think we're a children's birthday party place. The artwork on the wall, the music, the interactions we do on the golf course, everything that we do, from the antique furniture that we pick in a local market and put inside of those Disney quality party rooms, it's all very intentional to appeal to the adult. Appeal to the adult with all of the auditory, the visual. Appeal to the kids, love the arcade games, the bright lights. You know, if the parents feel comfortable there, then you're going to get a deeper win, and you're going to get that win more often. So we really try to, from an aesthetics point, appeal to that adult. When they walk in, they don't feel like it's a sterile white table in the corner at a trampoline park. They feel like this space is for them too. It immediately makes them more comfortable. If they come for a birthday party, you hear them saying, the husband and wife, we should come back here for a date night. Because let's face it, mini golf is the oldest form of family entertainment. And it's for everybody. Adults enjoy the game of mini golf. Grandparents enjoy it. Kids enjoy it. It's an attraction that everybody can enjoy with inclusivity.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's not physically demanding. Right.
And even the other attractions we've added, everything we add it with the goal of the family doing it together. Like the reason we do the string pin or the duck bowling, the small mini bowling, is because that ball, a three-year-old can roll it. They don't need that big contraption at a bowling alley that they're really just pushing a ball that the parent actually did all the work. So it's really a unique thing that we, and this, I brought this, you know, with my experience with my gym, we're age appropriate. Our training is very based on the psychology of connecting with people age appropriately. So how do you connect with a group of five-year-olds at a birthday party? How do you connect with four guys getting off work on a Friday evening, loosening their tie to play a game of mini golf?
Right.
That's where we live. We live in the human connection. We often say our product isn't mini golf at all. Entertainment is our product. Mm-hmm. Mini golf just happens to be the vehicle in which we deliver that product.
100% agree with you, right? Hollywood thought they're in the motion picture business. You're in the entertainment business, right? You're not in the airline business. You're in the transportation business. Like, know what business you're in. Completely agree with you. So if 11 to 13% birthday parties, help me understand the lion's share of revenue is coming from just adults that want to hang out there and play mini golf, maybe even without their children? Or no, it's a family event.
It's a family event. I mean, no child's coming without an adult. You know, so some of that adult traffic simply because the entire family's coming. But yeah, for the most part, we're a family event. But you on any given night, Friday and Saturday nights, you watch the cutoff to where the kids stop coming, and it's young adults. Maybe it's college kids. It doesn't even have to be married couples. But that date night on those Friday and Saturday nights, there's hardly any kids in the building, but we're still very busy with adults because the game of mini golf it transcends multiple generations.
Chris, you know? I never would have thought that. That's very interesting.
And mini golf has been around. I mean, think about this. Mini golf, just as a concept by itself, has been around over 100 years, and it's been profitable as a seasonal business. So
that's
the only
right.
thing we've done and the founders did was bring it indoors,
year-round.
Make it cooler than it's ever been, and that's still that business model still works. Now mini golf is, because that's our core attraction, it's 50% to 55% of our revenue model. But the arcade is another 30-ish%. And here's the reason. If you think about our mini golf course, it has a DJ booth on it, moving monsters. We have people out there entertaining, you know, doing trivia from the microphone, going out to the hole, playing contests with you, giving you skill challenges. So it's a ride. So think about going to Disney. How often do you wait for a ride that you really want to do? As long as you're satisfied, once you do it, you're going to wait again to do it. So what happens in our business is on those busy days, Saturdays, Sundays, or any day when school's not in session, we could have a 30 to 90 minute wait to get on our golf course because the anticipation for the ride is there. And what did they do while they're waiting?
Arcade.
They live in that arcade. So by default, they come for the mini golf. That's the driver. But then the ancillary income, you know, is there, and it does its purpose because when they're waiting, what else are they going to do? They're going to enjoy the other forms of entertainment that we offer.
Are all locations doing mini golf, party rooms, arcade, laser, bowling, virtual reality, or no? It depends on the size and legacy locations.
That's exactly it. Okay. So our core model is the mini golf course, the arcade, and the birthday party and event rooms. You know, that's a nine to 12,000 square foot. And that's how it's been for 21 years. Now you have the options, and we try to be very responsible to the expense model. Again, we don't have a lot of cost of goods. You give somebody a golf club, you give them a ball, you take that back at the end of the experience. There's no inventory that you're replacing all the time. So by being responsible to the two biggest expenses, you can drive bottom line for your franchisees. So we understand that real estate is the basic expense that we're going to pay, and we're going to pay it for 5 to 10 years. The life of the business is going to pay that. So what we do is we let the real estate and the economics of the real estate drive the model in any given market. So if we go in looking for 15,000 square foot, that's an irresponsible search. Let's search from 10 to 15,000 square mm-hmm. foot, 9 to 12 being our sweet spot. Anything over 12, there's extra expenses and you have to add stuff. But there's some markets where you find a 19,000 square foot space and it's better. The economics are better than the 12,000 square foot space. So that's when it becomes more modular. But You have the choice based on the real estate. We're looking for that 9 to 12,000 square foot. And based on what you find and the economic deal being right, then we say, oh, you've got more space than the core model. So now let's go through our a la carte menu of attractions and see what else that that you would like to add to that, being the four lanes of mini bowling, a laser maze, a laser tag. One thing to note is we also, the next thing we're very responsible for on is the labor. So most of the attractions that we select as those secondary attractions still just operate on an arcade game card. So there's no extra labor. So I put four lanes of bowling into 1,500 square foot, and I put that on our tap card system. Now there's a real attraction there, but it doesn't cost me any more money. I don't have to staff it. The laser maze, same thing. So, you know, everything is really done intentional to protect the economics, because it's a simple model, you know, that there's not a lot of heavy expenses outside of your rent and your labor. So protect those at all costs.
Absolutely. What about food? Are you preparing food for the kids at the parties and snacks?
You know, so 90% of our stores don't have a food and beverage component.
They just order it in? They just bring it in? Yeah.
You know, what's interesting is 10 years ago, you couldn't get into those B and A plus retail plazas. We just couldn't get in there. We were going into flex spaces. We were doing what we could. You know, so then, you know, you don't have the food, the quick service casual dining next door to you. Now, because your junior anchors, like your Tuesday mornings and some of these boxes, Party City, they're all going out of business. The big trampoline park can't come in there. We can't, you know, so we're experiencing something different right now. So now we can land in that plaza that there's a burrito place next door or a pizza place next door. And we just go and sub out and make those deals with those people. So on the weekends, we'll just go to a local pizzeria around us and say, how much do you sell your pies for? Oh, you sell them for 13. We want to sell them for what you sell them for. We don't want to increase it, but but it's a volume play. If I can sell you 200 pies in a month, will you give them to me at 10?
That's right.
So now I can still make the $3 off the pie. I can still give the convenience to the guest. They can still get that same experience, but I don't have the investment of the kitchen, which is large, depending on where you are, you know, and I don't have the labor and the inventory behind it. Now, that being said, one of the add-ons you can add is you can add a snack bar if that's something that you're comfortable with doing. Most of our franchisees don't want to be in the food business.
No.
In the entertainment business, they don't want to be in the high cost, you know, high inventory business. But we have three or four that they came from a different world and they appreciate a very small component just to sell pizzas or hot dogs or pretzels to that captive audience they have. So that's a choice that they can make, but most don't make it. Most have, you know, an icy machine, you know, bottled sodas so you can put a top on it and not be spilling things everywhere.
Right.
And then a light selection of prepackaged foods that don't carry any kind of license or, you know, or health inspection.
You're making more money, literally, buying a pizza for $10 and reselling it for $13. You're making more money per pie net margin than the pizzeria is. There is no way the pizzeria is making 30 points to the bottom line. This is not happening. So that being said, get rid of complexities. You're not in the food business. You're in the entertainment business. Like, get out of that business. I think it's great. I love it. And it's not like anyone's asking for like, oh, I thought you'd have an extensive menu. It's indoor putt-putt golf.
One thing about us, our model is very simple, and we've kept it that way for years and years and years. We're very comfortable in our identity. Monster Mini Golf does not make decisions because of what other people are doing. We know who we are. We know where we live. We know what we're great at. You know, we know what we don't want to do.
Yeah.
You know, so I'll go to, you know, industry shows and, you know, I can't believe you're not doing food. How are you not doing? I say, well, our margins are great. I'm not going to do food. I'm doing better without it and with less complexities. Another thing that people are shocked that we don't do alcohol. We have zero alcohol in any of our stores. So people are like, oh, the margins are so good. Our margins are good. So with alcohol, what you do is you add different complexities. So sure, are the margins great on alcohol? Absolutely, 100%. So do you have more liability with crime and people getting out of control?
Yes.
You do. So one reason we don't do alcohol is it just, you know, our owners are very involved in their business, but they're not behind their cash register every day. As soon as you have the alcohol in your food, your liability increases. You got to spend more time at that store. You got to be there more. I can run a store on a slow day. A 12,000 square foot store with two people.
Wow.
I could say that my labor per hour is paid if three mini golfers come in.
Wow.
So while in bigger industries or people, competitors, indirect and direct, especially with the entertainment sector, a lot of them don't get in the black until midday on Saturday when those birthday parties kick in. That's not us. That's not who we are.
I like it.
We build more stores because we have that unique ability to design our own stores based on the construction of the golf course. We build them with line of sights. So two people could run into a building, 12,000 square foot, with moderate traffic, as long as there's no like major parties and events, could run it for 8 hours.
I love it.
You know, so everything with us is very intentional. And another thing, people say, well, why don't you have a big dining room and space? You know, I have a teenager. I love teenagers. But we also know what a group of loitering teenagers could do to a business. They need a place to go hang out. So there's not a lot of seating in Monster Mini Golf. We really try to maximize revenue generation per square foot. There's not a lot of rooms, not a lot of places to sit. If you didn't reserve the party room, you can't go in there. It's not a hangout. Right. So what happens is the average dwell time for a guest is about an hour and a half. The mini golf is about a 45-minute ride. Then they do some other attractions. When they're done, they leave. So everything that we do from a design, people will say, it's so small. It's not small. It's what we want it to be. And we don't have the problems that you do. I mean, in Charlotte, 5 minutes from our Monster Mini Golf in the Charlotte area, we have three here, but 5 minutes from that, there's a huge entertainment center. It has all the alcohol, all the food, you know, 100,000 square foot of entertainment. Sure, seems super cool. Every Friday and Saturday night after 7 o'clock, you have to be 18 to be in there, and there's police in front of it both nights. Knock on wood, as a brand, we don't have that problem.
No, I'm with you. Yeah. I mean, people could criticize you all day long. As you said, we know who we are. We know what we stand for. We know our business model. We know the quality of our life. We know our labor model, which is enviable compared to anyone criticizing you. I completely agree. You mentioned the staffing and the number of people. What is the average ticket as it relates to other indoor? 10, 15? Like, what am I paying to be there for the day? You said I'm there about an hour and a half is the average dwell time?
Yeah, for just a guest. So birthday parties are a totally different thing. That's a totally different thing. So one thing that we do that's pretty unique from a pricing structure, I'm going to get to the answer to your question, but I want to give you all the context. So we still do, when we do a competitive analysis on a new store, we still price our mini golf to be more affordable for a family of four than going to a movie.
Okay.
And with our personal touch in the way we entertain on a human-to-human connection where you're getting more and you don't expect it to walk in the door. People in any service today expect mediocre service. That's just what's out there. So when they get elevated service, they're like, well, I got that and it was cheaper. Not many brands can say I can do the best and be the most affordable. So we price our mini golf to be that really affordable. Anybody can do it. Any socioeconomic demographic can spend $10 to $12 on a game of mini golf. The average ticket ends up being somewhere between 20 and 25. We have some combos, you know, designed where it's, hey, buy a game of mini golf and a $10 game card. Okay. And you save a few points. That ends up being what most people do. They spend $20 to $25. They come in, they get that 45-minute ride in mini golf. They spend another 45 minutes playing those attractions. And if they're really having a great time, then it turns into 50 or 60 because they just go reload that arcade game card and keep playing. But I'm saying the average ticket for the general guest coming in is about 20 to 25, meaning a family of four could come into our center on a Saturday and they could spend $80 and have an hour and a half of fun. $80. Right. I mean, I have two kids at home. I go to some centers. I don't go to as many as I used to, but when I go, it's $150, $160. It's not cheap for the family to go out and have a good time today.
Right.
So we try to be a volume business, not a business that has to extrapolate every dime from a customer because we have them one time. I want to show them the best ride, show them that we're not just stealing their money and have them come back 3 to 4 times a year because they feel that they got real value for their hard-earned dollar.
Right on. Yeah, no, I like that. You also, I completely agree with you. You also talked about the square footage. What is optimal? Like this, there's Goldilocks, right? There maybe 8,000 or 9,000 is too small, 16,000, 17,000 is too big. Where's the sweet spot where you can maximize, as you said, revenue per square foot, offer all the things we want to offer and have a nice sustainable business that doesn't, you know, require a ton of labor.
Obviously, you know, we're 9 to 12,000 ideally. I would say that 11 to 12,000 square foot today, I call it our mid-size model. It's the most advantageous from a revenue generation standpoint. Because with that, you can have our golf course is about 5,000 square foot. So you can have the mini golf course. You can have four lanes of miniature bowling, which is a great complimentary revenue stream. You can have that in about 1,500 square foot. You can have a laser maze attraction where you go in and you dodge lasers. And that, I mean, that attraction is only about 150 to 200 square foot.
Okay.
You know? So now you're literally, I have three attractions. I have mini golf. I have bowling. I have laser maze. And then a lot of our stores have VR, but VR is just a video game based VR. You know, it's a
ride. They're just sitting there. Right.
Yes.
Right.
So now, you know, you're not telling a lie. I've got mini golf. I've got bowling. I've got laser maze. I've got VR. And then you have another 20 or 30 arcade games and you have still plenty of elbow room. So that 12,000 square foot with the complimentary attractions being bowling and laser maze tends to be the most popular. Now, when our franchisees come in and they're looking at real estate and they're trying to figure out what they want, that seems to be what people are choosing the most.
Okay. Interesting. All right. I like that. So anything patented, proprietary, anything in the model?
No, I mean, a lot of the things that we do on our golf course, you know, some of the design elements that we have, you know,
right.
Our trademark characters, but there's not, you know, there's not, I mean, we can't patent go in the dark mini golf, even though we were the first to ever do it. That's a cool thing to say that we were the first 21 years ago that brought mini golf indoors and put it under black lights.
You had the IP attorney, so I wasn't sure what you guys pulled off.
Yeah, no, I mean, believe me, we've only owned it for 2.5-3 years. So I can guarantee you Holly's wheels are always turning there,
right.
You know,
because
there is opportunity, you know, as you grow. But no, the technology is, you know, we use the same technologies and, you know, things like that, that are just, you know, synonymous in the industry. The uniqueness really becomes in the way we design and the way we present the entertainment.
So go through the staffing model, because you mentioned just a couple of people would be needed. I'm showing a bigger labor model. So help me understand. I have like a GM, assistant manager, 6 to 8 part-time employees that I know are probably not working all at the same time. Help me understand that labor model at any given moment. If I walked in, how many people would I see, if you will?
So it's a general manager for the most part. You know, some people will open that first store and they will assume that role as an owner operator for a little while until they get comfortable with somebody in the other organization. Then they bring them up. Some people will hire it, but eventually you're going to need some type of general manager role. And then under that, you need 2 to 3, what I'm going to call shift supervisors. I'm not even going to say assistant managers.
Okay.
Those are 2 or 3 people that you can trust to uphold the concept and some basic training. They're reliable to open up, to be there on time, to unlock and lock the building, and you can trust them with your money. You know, so there's 2 or 3 of those guys. And then the rest are 8 to 10, you know, part-time employees that are mainly nights and weekends that are, you know, doing the birthday parties, doing the entertainment. On a normal school day, Monday through Thursday, I need 2 people.
Okay,
got it. And open until 2 o'clock. So if they come in at 1:30 and we close at 9:30, I don't need 2 shifts. I need 2 people to open and close. And what you can do, because our model, again, everything's so designed by us that it's very fluid. Once you understand your traffic, you can even scale that back. You can even have your great manager come in from 1:30. You know that your traffic on a slower Tuesday, you get a few people right at 2, but you really don't get much until after school lets out at 4:30. You can have that great person run it from 2 to 4:30, save yourself a few bucks, filter in that second, you know, that second position, 4:30 or 5, they run till close. And that's really an efficient model. On a weekend, you can run it per shift with 4 to 5 people. It's not very complex. You just then, when you get, and that's without birthday parties. The birthday party, that's when your volume increases. But the beauty of the birthday party is that's booked business. That booked business already has a labor accounted for it. So, and I can have one birthday party host do every other party. So if I had 6 birthday parties in a day, I really only need 2 people to hold the fort down on those, and another 3 or 4 to run the general operation. So we're never more, or even at high volume, than about 6 people in the building, you know, when we've got a full load of birthday parties and we've got a 90-minute wait for our golf course. It's just, it's not, you go to some of the other places and you're like, I saw more staff members than I saw guests. There were people everywhere in their shirts, and it's just not needed for us.
Interesting. Let's get into the item 7. It sounds very interesting. What does it cost to do this? I mean, you guys are banging out 3-4 locations, which is, I love the fact that there are franchisees that own this brand. I love that you eat what you cook. I love that you're in the trenches with your, you know, franchise community, and you're in it big. You guys are all in. These are big investments.
The investment model, and we just redid our, when we did the, redid the item seven last year, we re-registered, it shows a wide gap in investment, but I'll explain why. We show about 885 as our low and 1.5 as our high.
Okay.
Years ago, the arcade, we kept it as an additional an additional investment, something that you could or didn't have to buy. The arcade runs anywhere from 275 to 3.25. Years ago, no one owned their own arcade games. We had an operator that you wouldn't pay anything. They would come in, they would put the arcade, but then you split the revenue.
Okay.
So in a great month, you might give them $20,000 when your arcade loan would have been 7 or 8. So what changed this past year in our FDD, and that's why you see the great difference between 885 and 1.5, is the arcade can be 0 or 3.25.
Got it.
But the arcade is advantageous to own. You know, it's 30 to 33% of the revenue model. You want to own your arcade if you can, if you can afford that investment. So that's where you see the difference is just, you know, but if you opt to own the arcade, then your revenue that you're keeping is going to go up too.
What is the average cost of one of those games, video games that I see in a facility like yours?
The average cost to play?
To purchase it as a franchisee.
Yeah, somewhere between 275 and 3.25.
No, you know? No, that's the total. I'm talking about one machine. Oh, what would be the average of a machine?
It's funny. There's a game, if you've been to arcade lately, you've seen the games where they're just rings and they have numbers on them and it's a crane that picks up a ring.
Yes.
And then you remember a ticket. That game, that's about a $5,000 game.
Okay.
That game could generate you $80,000 in your first year. So we have games that are $4,000 or $5,000.
Okay.
And then you could have a VR game today that's $48,000 to buy. So that, you know, it's just, and we have 20 years of experience. We have Cadillac reporting. We know what our games generate down to the time, to the penny, their payouts of tickets. So when we're consulting, you know, we're turnkey. So when a franchisee says, okay, this is the space I have for an arcade. These are the, you know, I think I can fit about 30 games in. Nick, my partner, is going through that consultation with them, making sure we're picking the best ones that fit in their budget. So right. It's never like they're out there picking it on their own. But some of them are super expensive because that's just what they are. And some of them aren't.
That's great, though. I like it. So you could own instead of outsourcing it or leasing it or revenue sharing it. Just own it if you can.
Just own it if you can.
Yeah.
And there's only about 3 stores in our entire system today with 38, number 39 opening in about 3-4 weeks. There's only 3 stores that don't own their arcade
All
games
right.
now, which 6 years ago, there was probably only 3 that did. So everybody has either bought out their existing arcade or they've opted to buy the arcade. So that it's, you know, when you're talking about revenue potential and generation and dropping to your bottom line, the arcade is a huge part of it today. Where maybe it was an underlooked or underserved portion, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, the technology's just increased so much and the appetite for video gaming and that type of experience, it's just what we should be doing today.
Okay, got it. All right, so now I have the square footage, I have the total investment, I understand. You're right, the range was 885 to 1.5 million. Now I completely understand. Let's get into the revenue. Are we making money doing this? It sounds like we are.
We were very transparent in our item 19 this past year. At the end of last year, we had 26 stores operational. We put 26 full P&Ls in our item 19.
Wow.
We put them in as 3 tiers because guess what? It doesn't matter what you do. There's always going to be a best and there's always going to be a worst. You can't control that. You know. So what we see is our top tier, you know, top 8 or 9 stores doing anywhere from 28 to 34% right to the bottom line.
Wow. On over a million.
Yeah. And then our middle section, you know, still upwards of, you know, 19 to 24, 25. That's a desirable margin. You know, there's always going to be a lower tier that needs to do a little work. Some of those lower tier stores that have been around 16 or 17 years, some of them have offsite ownership. So there's always a reason why, you know, someone's there. There's always going to be a best. There's always going to be a worst. But, you know, with an average AUV of over a million, you know, and people generating those kind of percentages to their net. I mean, we're a really healthy system.
I'll say. I mean, I'm looking at some of these EBITDA numbers. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, if you pull off
that bottom tier, you know what's really a cool story? Pull off the top tier. I don't know if you're looking at it or if you reviewed it, but you have Seattle, Washington. This is what's cool to us is the model can work anywhere. you know, and not many models can. So Seattle, Bellevue, Washington. Obviously, it rains 340 days a year.
Right.
There's disposable income. You know, the demographics as far as population density are off the charts. You know, that store did over 2.2 million its first year. I mean, just a wonderful success story for us. Cordova, Tennessee, opposite market. You know, very small suburb outside of Memphis. Not the density, not the money, none of it being equal. Cordova in their first year, you know, did a gross of 1.5.
Yeah, I see that.
To see that it happening very consistently in very different markets, I mean, the validation's just there. You know, another part of the validation is before this year, this is a cool story. Before this year, we're about 65% multi-unit operators today. Before this year, no one ever bought more than one.
Okay.
So I've got people that have 3, 4, many people that have 2.
Yep.
You know, you don't grow 3, 4 stores starting with one if something wasn't working.
That's right. I completely agree. Buying multiple units is one thing. Actually operating them, right? It's sold, not open. If they're sold and if you're getting them open, it's a feather in your cap. People believe in the brand. You know, they believe in you.
You know what? A founding principle even that came from the founders is, Eva, before we bought this company, we had never sold a store that we have not opened ever. And we still hold that track record today.
There's not a lot of brands that could say that. You know that.
And there's not a lot of brands. I mean, let's face it. Franchising has an underbelly. There's people that's part of the business model is to sell it and not open it.
That's right.
That's not who Monster Mini Golf is. Monster Mini Golf is about pure, transparent business among people.
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't think I've read an FDD yet that was that granular down to listing the square footage of every location, the services that they provide, their annual revenue, and then the revenue per square foot.
You know, we're predictable. We're predictable as far as we have a little bit of seasonality. So if you saw, we also included a chart that showed our revenue percentage by month. You know, we just want to show everything because I know that May and September, I know this. And it's very predictable with us. May and September are our dip months. And we know why. That's when the family dynamic changes from the school year to the summer. One, leaving the school in May and then going into summer, there's graduations, there's family vacations. Family's entertainment and spending habits with disposable income changes there. And then it changes the opposite way when you leave summer and you go into the school year. So we wanted to show even that. We wanted to show, so now I can tell you when we're having a conversation, the predictability. I can predict when you want to have a few more nuts squirreled away for the winter, and now I'm going to show it to you. But I also want to show you when you can get those extra nuts to squirrel away. I want to show you what those other months do. So it was all really just put it all out there and then be able to have really logical conversations and realistic conversations when those questions come up. Because an answer verbally being supported by data is a more powerful answer.
I completely agree. You know, it's so interesting that you mentioned your item 19 listing the revenue by month. That is the moment. I told you my assumption. I viewed you as a birthday party business. Here's where I knew I was wrong when I read that in your item 19. August, July, and September are the top three birth months in this country. We birth nearly 3.5 million people a year in America. So when I went to your item 19, I'm looking for spikes in August, July, and September. And so September was one of the worst performing months. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. And there you have it. It's very interesting how you slice and dice data.
And the reason why August and July are so powerful is because those are just months that kids are out of school.
Right.
So that's not birthday
money. It's not necessarily birthday money, right.
You know, and really slower birthday party money, because birthday party business is really during the school year when you can invite the entire classroom to an event. August and July, that's just foot traffic.
Right.
That's just more opportunity because people are out of school.
This is great. What did we miss? We're up on time. Any announcements, anything new, anything we missed?
No, you know, we're a company that's on, you know, right now after 21 years, we're experiencing more growth than we ever have. It's not going to slow down. You know, one cool thing is, you know, we're a legacy brand, but we have emerging brand opportunity. And usually you don't get that. You get one or the other, you know, so we're just really excited about where we're going and how we're growing, but we're working really, really hard to not lose who we are. We're not going to lose our culture. We're not going to lose that attachment to people. We're not going to lose that family feel. I'll give you one funny anecdote to end. When we do our discovery days and people come to Charlotte and they spend time with us, my partners fly in, our wives come to dinner. I mean, they leave saying, we've talked to 3 or 4 brands and they all say you're joining a family. They say, you're not lying. We're joining a family here. And I say, yes. And family comes with ups and downs. Yeah. Family comes with successes and heartache and tears and hard work. All of that's here, but you're joining a family. You're joining a group of people that actually care. And it's just evident. They go through the whole discovery process. And then when they come and sit and break bread with us, they leave feeling, whether they sign with us or not, they leave feeling like this was different. And that's what lets me know that we're on the right track. When people feel what we're really trying to exude,
right.
that's very gratifying with us, because that's our number one goal, is not to lose ourselves in this. We can't, because who we are and what we do is a special part of it.
Yeah, I love how laser focused you are on that. You're creating a culture and you're not deviating from it. And I think it's important. Too many brands, they'll just be whipsawed in different directions. They move with basic trends that can only be around for months. They're like pivoting and changing everything. No, stay true to your identity. Don't deviate. Right. I love it.
You have to be comfortable in your own skin.
Yes.
And we're just very comfortable in our own skin.
You have a very cool brand. You guys are doing all the right things. You've doubled the size of the company. You're all in. Again, you eat what you cook. You own the business. You're in the trenches. It's super powerful. And not enough brands do it. A lot of them in the beginning, they did it. And then they divest themselves and go all in on franchising as an expansion plan. But they don't want to own any locations themselves. So I commend you and your business partners. I really enjoyed having you on the show, learning about your brand. Matter of fact, now that it's interesting that you said what you said, I got to grab the family. I got to head over there. It's not far. It's only like 20 minutes from my house. It's not far. I'm going to. I'm going to make it a date night, like you said. Great meeting you, Chris. And thanks for your time today. I appreciate it.
Hey, the pleasure was mine. Anytime you'd like to chat, I'm always around. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to like and subscribe so you never miss out on more great content. And if you're considering investing in a franchise, whether it's the brand you featured today or another opportunity, we're here to help. Visit us at franocity.com. That's FRANOCITY.com. We'd love to help you take that next step towards business ownership.